It is the... You know what? That's not going to work right. Let's try this one. It is the 12th. No, it is the 8th, thank you, of December. This is our final Privacy in the Digital Age session for the semester. And perhaps by way of introduction, I wanted to thank you guys for your patience, in a sense. I realized this was an atypical class. Well, I'm sure at some point, some level, you really didn't mind not having readings. I also realized that it kind of made things a little less concrete. And so I'm here to tell you not to worry about it. That I'm not going to expect more understanding than we've had in class, plus perhaps taking a look at the laws that we've mentioned. But we've been talking about concepts all semester. We've been talking about the idea of privacy, of informational privacy, of how information, personally identifiable information and similar things, are collected, are used, are shared, and protected, and what happens legally if and when those data, the protection for those data fails. And that's really been the overarching discussion. Whether we're talking about websites or health, financial privacy, in the context, as in our most recent class, of criminal law, it's about the idea that there is this thing called information. Right, that can be collected. What am I looking for here? Not 2009, thank you. That's why. That can be collected, can be used properly or improperly, and these issues of best practices. What I want to see from the exam is you're taking a look at facts. The way that I would imagine you've started perhaps looking at websites differently or interactions with business. I was in a store today and the checkout person asked me for my zip code. And it occurred to me, I know why, right? And you maybe now think about, why would they need a zip code? And we've discussed this. That with your zip code and whatever came off the credit card in terms of your name, there's a tremendously greater amount of information about you available to that retailer through third-party databases. That's why you have to look at collection of information is not just from the person, but from other sources. So that, and that when the model that we have is a permission model, the idea of self-regulation, which, as I've said throughout the semester, with exceptions in areas like finance and health and children, overall, the U.S. system is a self-regulatory system. The government is trusting businesses to do the right thing. But what's at the heart? We've seen this. What key concept, then, is at the heart of allowing businesses to do the right thing? What must businesses in turn do before they collect information about from customers? What does the FTC complain about when it doesn't happen? Did this person simply take my wallet and look at my zip code? No, what did she do? She asked, right?
Like, doesn't that attempt to disclosure?
But disclosure, in a sense, what's the purpose of disclosure? It's to get consent, right? We go right back to the fair information practice principles. I don't know if you recall our discussing these. It was at the very beginning of the class. This is something that I would recommend you study. And I will send around through the Westlaw TWEN link a list of these things. But right here, this page within the Federal Trade Commission website, this is not law. I don't want you to be misinformed. I don't want you not to misunderstand. These are principles. These are actually universal principles of best practices when it comes to personal information. These principles show up in European law, they show up elsewhere in the world, and they show up in not only the law, but what the FTC has expected in the self-regulatory environment. Notice and awareness. Notice and awareness is disclosure. In order so that you can get informed choice and consent. Access and participation. That the individual whose information is being collected has the ability to access that data, those data, to check them, to correct them, to fix them, to delete them, so that they're not just out there, never to be touched again. Integrity and security, so that the data they remain accurate and protected from malfeasance, from carelessness, from being shared in the wrong way. Enforcement and redress, this is the essence of self-regulation. In order to make self-regulation work, there has to be some consequence that the company itself imposes, the collector of the information. Otherwise, there's going to be outside enforcement imposed. Without consequence, there's no negative incentive here. So those are the five biggies. And when you look at everything we've done this semester, and really everything you will look at as attorneys in the context of advising your clients on data protection and on business privacy, you will return over and over again, or at least you should, to these five key ideas. How are they implemented? Notice and awareness is the reason for a privacy policy. Choice and consent is either assumed or explicit as part of a good privacy policy. You are telling, and then you are asking for permission. And a properly drafted, crafted, and thought about privacy policy will lay out issues of access and participation. Will at least, if not specify, will at least acknowledge the importance of integrity and security. And again, hopefully provide some area of enforcement or at least of redress if there's a problem. And the same thing goes for what, not just the disclosure side, but what your client's practices are. Your client must understand it should be giving notice, asking for consent, offering access and participation, ensuring integrity and security, and ultimately understand that either it offers legitimate enforcement and redress, or it can expect a knock on the door from those that can. We see we have choice of self-regulation, private remedies, and government enforcement. And this goes on to talk about how those principles specifically come in when it comes to issues of collecting information from children. That's our framework. Right there. This is the philosophical framework of all of U.S. data privacy law. When we get law, it's because something here isn't going to be sufficiently put out by self-regulation because of the context. because the information is too sensitive, or because the individual isn't able to consent legally, or isn't able to be aware enough to understand it. That's it. So what do you have to know? You have to understand this. And when you go back and look at the PowerPoints and the podcasts, and I realize I promised to put up the last few, I also realize it didn't happen between Tuesday and today, for which I apologize. I'm happy to say them really quickly if you need me to in order to ask some questions, or at least put them on the screen. But when you go back and you look at our discussions, you will keep seeing resonance of this. You will see it, in a sense, even in things like the cybercrime discussion. The choice and consent is there, except when warrant requirements take it away. But choice and consent can override the need for a warrant, right? Integrity and security have to do with data preservation. Enforcement and redress, there's exclusionary rules. Access and participation, right? We have the right to a trial. We have the right to confront our accusers. And so on. Even there, this comes up. So what do I expect you to know? I expect you to at least be aware of the highlights. Be aware of the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act and its current set of rules. Fairly well summarized. The idea of verifiable parental consent before collecting information from children under the age of 13. And at least a little bit of the challenges of getting that consent. So that I could give you a hypothetical which raises an issue of children, but the client's method could be kind of iffy. And it would be your job as an attorney to say to the client, look, you've got to have verifiable parental consent, and email alone may not do it because this is what the Federal Trade Commission has said, and here are some alternatives. That to me would be a reasonable level of understanding. Could give you an area of health privacy, knowing that personally identifiable health information is protected under HIPAA and its related rules, and that it's not just physicians or health insurance companies. The hypothetical could talk about an IT person who works in doctor's offices, who comes in and just works on a handshake. And I would expect you to remember that one of the things we specifically said in HIPAA is you need a business associate agreement. That there has to be a contract with very specific provisions for anyone who is working with someone covered by HIPAA and gets access to the data. I might give you a hypothetical, for example, about cloud computing. I wouldn't expect you to define that. But the idea that your data or a business's data might be stored off-site under control of somebody else. We've talked about some of the security lapses with services like Dropbox. Those are the kinds of things that I would expect you to know and to at least be able to think clearly about. And as I've said, you're going to have your choice. You will have probably 7 questions, of which you'll have to choose 4 in 3 hours. And you'll be able to choose the 4 that you are most comfortable with. And they won't be so clear-cut. They will probably be intersections. The more thoughtful you can be, the closer you can read the questions, the more issues you can not only spot, but then analyze, the better you'll do. I don't know if that made things better or worse. Hopefully that's consistent with what I've been saying all along. My cyber law exam from 2003 is now on record. As of this week, they put it up. It's been in the library before, but they've just converted to some new system. But if you want to see how I write exams generally, it's not a privacy exam. It's going to look a lot like it, though. If you want to see what I'm talking about in terms of hypotheticals, take a look at that exam. Yours will look an awful lot like that one in structure. Same kind of questions. Obviously, that was focusing on what I taught 8 years ago from a different set of materials. But again, hypotheticals, some more practical, some sillier, designed to make you to show me you understand what we're talking about. That's my intro. Are there any specific questions yet? I hope so. I'd hate to waste this time. You guys have come out. No? Is it too early? Really?
Should we look more into the statutes than what you've given us on the PowerPoints and what you've said to us? I mean, should we be looking these up?
Here's what I would say to that. If, I mean, some of these statutes are very discreet. Some, and the regulations, are most certainly not. My answer is, look at what we've discussed in class. Not just the PowerPoints. Put the podcasts on, you know, hyperspeed. Maybe you can auto-tune me too, I don't care. That'd be fun to hear, right? Auto-tune the podcast. Where we've focused more discussion, the pieces of the statutes that we've looked at more intensely are the ones that you need to be, that I would say go back to the actual language. So for example, COPPA talks about a lot of things. It talks about verifiable parental consent. It talks about labeling advertising. It talks about sexually explicit content, right? There's things like that, but we've really focused on the issues of verifiable parental consent and how to get them and how not to get them, and we spent some time talking about how the FTC was changing those rules, or at least trying to. Were I you, I'd be looking at that section. In HIPAA is huge. But note what we've focused on. We've focused on generally issues of who has the right to access the information, issues of access controls. Remember? We looked at some of the enforcement of HIPAA, where HHS has gone after doctors' offices, and we spent some time looking at those, and that's really, and the business associates rule. Now, have we spent a whole lot of time talking about how to set up medical office computer systems? No. Nor would I expect you to have that level of understanding. But to be able to distinguish between personally identifiable health information and anonymous health information, that level of understanding of HIPAA and that focus I would recommend. You know, this is not statute, but I'd really suggest you spend some time thinking about this. The cases, the FTC's enforcement cases that we've gone back to a number of times. If you just go to ftc.gov/privacy and go under, well, let's see what it's under. That redirects you, but that's the easy way to remember it. Right? Case highlights. We've talked about a bunch of these. Worth looking at some of these. You know, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Broken Thumb Apps, which was the first case that ever talked about apps, and it's not just websites. Whether it was BJ's Wholesale Club, and we looked at a lot about that one. We've been there a few times. Because of how it's changed things. So that's really, I wouldn't say this is not like federal income tax where the statute is everything. The statutes are clearly important, as are the regulation, but so too, keep in mind, as I've mentioned a number of times, these cases are rarely based on, I mean, you do have like this, which is a COPPA violation, but most of these cases, the only statute they're based on is Section 5 of the Federal Trade Act, Federal Trade Commission Act, the one that you'll recall authorized this new FTC when it was created to protect consumers from deceptive and misleading practices. Remember, we focused on that provision. It's in the PowerPoint somewhere. That's all the statute you have for most of these cases. I've tried to be practical in this class, real world. And a lot of times you're not going to the statute. It's how it's going to be enforced, by whom, and sometimes it's even civil action. Lawsuits brought by people because their information was misused. I don't know how much more I can give you on that question. I would really focus on the PowerPoints, focus on the podcasts, because they're going to help you understand what went beyond just the slides, your own notes, whatever draft chapters I can get up there, hopefully finance and health hopefully more than that. But right now, children's social media are up there almost entirely complete, plus the sort of general one. Finance and health, which I was talking, I guess, to Francis the other day. I think it was with Francis. I was talking about this, that my plan on this class was totally reversed. My plan was that I would be writing the book first, and that the structure of the book would inform how the class got taught. Well, guess what? It's entirely reversed. I know what I'm doing in what the financial chapter will look like because of what we discussed. I know what the criminal law chapter, which I haven't even begun sitting down to write, that will be this class from Tuesday. You got the book. You got the Cliff's Notes version of it. And in a sense, all of you, and if I get a chance, I may even mention that fact, all of you made this book. So as a God willing, soon-to-be-finished author, I am very, very appreciative. But you'll have whatever I can give you in the next couple of weeks, but it won't be anything new, because it's really an embodiment of what the class was all about for the people that just don't have me in person. Any of these situations still you're wondering how this happened? Any of these laws that we've looked at, health stuff, stuff you've seen in your own lives, all the news stories? Anything is fair game. By the way, these news stories could well become a hypothetical. So I don't expect you to know them like we would the discussions. I really put them in there to put context to everything. But hey, might be an exam question in there too, or 12. Well, no other questions, really? Tell you what we're going to do, because I'm not letting you get away that easily. Let's take a quick trip down memory lane, shall we? It's like the last show of a sitcom where they show scenes from how the little kids, how the Olsen twins grew up and became NYU students or whatever it was. You know. Remember these? No, you wouldn't. Months ago. These are the concerns. Sensitive info, reputational damage, international concerns. Data breach. All of our wonderful stories of data breach. Gramm-Leach, Bliley, COPPA, and HIPAA, the big three. Gramm-Leach, Bliley, which we haven't focused as much on, right? Financial privacy. In a sense, this was what doesn't have to be kept private. But there was also the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which addressed the privacy of credit checks, and the issue of purchase privacy, when what you buy may or may not be disclosed. Remember, video rentals legally are protected. Other things can be shared. So that was really the introductory chapter. Our Constitution, etc. And some state law things, too. Probably worth rereading the Brandeis and Warren piece, or at least skimming it, if you haven't reread it already once. Worth reading. Talking about the right to privacy, because remember, that's where it came from. And that it was ultimately, this whole piece arose out of technology. In fact, someone on Twitter today made that point. There was apparently an FTC privacy conference today. I missed all the live tweets about it. I may go back and look. Maybe we'll take a look. We're done early-ish, see what was said. But someone said if this conference was happening 100 years ago, people would have been freaking out about, it was behavioral monitoring. People would have been freaking out about Kodaks like Brandeis did. He did. You know, this was behavioral monitoring. Do not track concerns. In the analog age, 1890, 121 years ago. Our FTC Act, Section 5, unfair methods of competition in or affecting commerce, and unfair or deceptive acts of or practices in or affecting commerce are hereby declared unlawful. And the commission is hereby empowered and directed to prevent all these businesses from using unfair methods of competition in or affecting commerce and unfair or deceptive acts or practices in or affecting commerce. There it is. 15 U.S.C. Section 45. That is the heart of all of the self-regulatory legal stuff on the federal level. All of the enforcement that FTC has done in the absence of a specific law comes right out of here. BJ's Wholesale Warehouse, Petco, Facebook, Google, Twitter, Sony Music. Well, no, that was a COPPA case. The fact that we needed COPPA was because the FTC was doing this stuff before when it had it, and it wanted some more weapons, and it wanted some more guidance, specifics, to let businesses know what would be considered unfair or deceptive when it came to marketing to children under the age of 13. Right there. The idea of the tort of intrusion on seclusion. There was an article, well, we talked about it, right? We looked at the introduction to Tuesday's class. Let's see if we can find it. There was that piece that we briefly went over. Did we not have a thing on Tuesday? There it is. Remember this case? This story that we discussed briefly? The other night, talking about how it was difficult to show harm in a privacy case. Those cases are all based on this state law, this general concept of invasion of privacy, state tort, which we at least briefly talked about in that class. And here was our first mention of what we returned to again in our class on crime. The three parts of the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. These are statutes you should at least review and skim. Not that much there. And they go into a whole lot of detail that's really beyond what we discussed here. But the idea that both private institutions and government institutions have, there's a general prohibition on them monitoring, but also places where they are permitted to in certain ways for certain purposes. Wiretap Act, what does that deal with? What kind of communications, what kind of content does the Wiretap Act deal with? What? Wiretap?
Oh, no, current. What's going on right now?
What's going on right now, right? And what part of what's going on now does Wiretap Act focus on? What's being said or who's saying it? When you think about it, a wiretap, what are you concerned with? Who's on the call or what they're saying? Content. What they're saying is the Wiretap Act. Who's saying it, when it's being said, etc., is the Penn Register statute as it's happening. Tapping, checking the phone numbers that are being dialed. And once it's stored, Stored Communications Act. And what key element has to be present? Two elements. Comes right out of the titles before any of these statutes come into effect. What fact, what two factors are necessary in order to even begin to look at the Electronic Communications Privacy Act? What do you need? Communications, right, so just a file is not going to do. And what kind of communications? Electronic communications. Postal letters, not considered. Happily, it says so right in the title, but don't forget that. ECPA. So really, I gave you this stuff twice, so it means it really is important. Social networking. Happily, the chapter on social networking is pretty comprehensive at this point. Probably worth skimming. That'll give you a lot of what you need to remember. But it's also here. The privacy policies, etc. I love that. You might want to watch this again. I know there wasn't a lot in the slides, but consumer privacy is, at some level, the easiest piece of all of this. A, because we're all consumers. And B, because consumer privacy is so much based on, at least in this country, those five fair information principles. Those are your guideposts for good practice. And those are the places where you can see failures and go back to that FTC enforcement page. Notice, choice, participation, right? Private integrity and security, and enforcement redress. Like the six pillars. See, this is where I'm trying to figure out who's what age. My kids sort of miss. Any of you do those, like, trustworthiness, respect, responsibility? Any of your schools do the six pillars when you were in, like, middle school or elementary? You're probably, you're looking like those are vaguely familiar. There were videos. You're probably a little old for that. Worth watching Google before Congress talking about privacy, that moment, or anything Al Franken has done in his subcommittee, which is really very interesting stuff. But that's it. Think of your experience as a consumer. Financial privacy. This is both for consumers and finance. Remember our cute fuzzy bears.com? all the parties involved in buying stuff and all the parties involved in paying for it. And this nice archaic chart before it, which is how a check gets processed. The different laws, and the podcast will give you all of that stuff. But ultimately, Right to Financial Privacy Act, federal government. What its obligations are with regard to financial information it has. Fair Credit Reporting Act, worth reviewing. Not all that complex, worth looking at. Gramm-Leach-Bliley, what financial institutions, those providing financial services, may and may not do with customer information they have. And Regulation SP, which really puts Gramm-Leach-Bliley into effect. We've already discussed a lot of this health stuff. So we have there's a lot of stuff here. I realize this was where we got into at least mentioning some cases. If you're interested, go look at the cases. Mostly because those are the key ones. The Tarasoff case in particular, I think. These cases are really about the issues of mandated confidentiality. The thing about medical privacy, the thing about health privacy, that you have to remember is the why question. Goes all the way back to Hippocrates. Remember? I think we talked about this. That doctors are obligated, as we are as lawyers, to keep their clients, their patients' information confidential in order for the patients to share it so that the doctors can then do the best job of possible. You don't need HIPAA to establish the need for medical privacy. Hippocrates established the need for medical privacy. The medical version of the Model Code of Ethics mandates privacy. Confidentiality, I should say. And just as we have a privilege held by our clients that protects what we talk about with our clients from being invisible, so too do doctors and other health professionals. That's where these cases get very interesting, because lots of different kinds of professionals get health information. And that's where HIPAA starts coming into effect. Physicians, osteopaths, psychiatrists, psychologists, clinical social workers, pharmacists, ophthalmologists, but then optometrists and opticians. The levels of professionals that provide health services and support those health services and the sensitivity of the information, those are the reasons why doctors have HIPAA and we don't have LIPA or the equivalent, right? The Legal Information Portability and Accountability Act. We have record retention and we have to share case files, but we don't have nearly the level of complexity in how we do what we do that health professionals do. So, and if you want to know what to know about HIPAA, look at how it's been enforced. And here's a nice little link in the HIPAA slides. How Health and Human Services has enforced it. And yeah, we did talk a little bit about genes and stuff, and it's really interesting and fun things. I would imagine that if you're really not comfortable with it, you will probably be able to find 4 questions on the exam that don't raise issues of genetic privacy and the ownership of a spleen. On the other hand, if you got into it, I'm fairly confident that you'll find a way to use that interest somewhere. And I say that having not yet written the exam question, so I'm not just being mysterious to you. It's a mystery to me yet. Data breach. We're right, you know, so on the one hand, right, you have the self-regulatory world. The FTC requiring companies, requiring businesses to do the right thing. Do the smart thing or else. The other end of the spectrum, you have HIPAA. Data breach, right there in the middle. As this class mentioned, this particular session, there are state laws now about disclosing data breaches when they happen, requiring those. And there are beginning to be, as in Massachusetts, some statutory requirements about keeping the data, and some contractual ones from the credit card people, the PCI things. But this legal part, the legal obligations with regard to before and after a data breach, still evolving. So it's difficult for any lawyer to say to a client, here is what you must do in advance before bad things happen. Once bad things happen, there's probably a state law at least that you have to, with which the client has to comply. But until the bad things happen, you have to look at contracts. What do the parties with which your client has a contract require it to do with those data? You have to look at what little regulation there may be, what Massachusetts is saying, does your client have exposure in Massachusetts? It's a tough one. It's a very middle-of-the-road situation. And we have our workplace stuff. What employers may and may not and must do with regard to how they monitor what employees do and what they do about personal information they have. These states where there are electronic monitoring laws, where in Connecticut and Rhode Island, was it? Certainly in Connecticut, at least, and that example's in the slides. Before your employer puts any electronic monitoring in place, it must disclose it clearly to employees. The difference between government and non-government employers. And then in terms of informational privacy, in the second session, looking at whether there is a right to privacy in the workplace and how far that goes. That was my 10-15 minute best of mega mix. Still no questions? That'll be there. I would really say that as a gloss. It is very likely that you will be able to find 4 questions on the exam where the lack of that detail won't hurt you. But I want you to know it. I want you to sit down, watch and listen to it, when you take a break from everything else you're doing, put it on a device that you can set up in the bathroom, whatever it is. I do require, I'm not sure whether I'm going to be able to check, but you're all grown-ups. I do require that between now and the end of the semester, once it's up, that you do spend some time and learn it. But it's, we missed that class. It's, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about it. I'm not going to expect anywhere near the level of understanding. So yeah, it's there. And the short, the 30-second review of something you haven't learned yet is every country can do things differently. Don't assume that what works here, what is done here, is elsewhere. Europe in particular puts a lot of restrictions on collecting personal information. It requires those that wish to collect personal information to register before they do so. There are, as we saw, growing penalties, proposed penalties in the 6-7 figures. Percentage of revenues, remember, because these issues are much more serious in Europe. They're perceived more seriously. European, and it really, it's difficult to generalize across Europe, even Western Europe. But the fact that the European Union has seen fit to pass its data protection directive, which you haven't yet read, but to which we made at least brief reference the other day, and now is looking to strengthen its enforcement, tells you something. That while we still remain a largely self-regulatory environment here in the United States, Europe isn't. Europe so isn't, in fact, that we had a problem. That our laws are so different that companies that do business in both ended up having to deal with, are they permitted to bring information out of Europe here? And I think we had briefly discussed this, and it will be in the slide, but if you go to export.gov/safe harbor, all one word, you will get the introduction of the problem that arose when Europe passed these rather stringent data protection laws, and we did not have any of the sort. Other countries clearly do their thing too. Canada has a very fairly, I would say it's between us and the Europeans, it's something called PIPEDA, P-I-P-E-D-A, and I don't remember offhand what that stands for, but we can look it up. So Canada has its own privacy and data protection rule. Personal Information Protection and Electronic Documents Act. There you go. Priv.gc.ca, the Office of the Privacy Commissioner of Canada. That's useful, in case any of you are Canucks to be, or your clients are. So that's the kind of thing that's out there for international, just to know that it's different. Other questions? Things that make you go, No. I'm here. Last chance. I know, it's early on. I always, I don't want to say inside baseball because sports metaphors are annoying. Outside of sports, but and then there's the peek inside the kimono, which is a rather offensive business term. Have you heard that one? Let me give you a little peek inside the kimono. No, thank you. I'd rather or there's the classic don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain. But I'll tell you, as someone who structures classes, I'm always, do I leave the last class for review or not? I'm always back and forth on that because this happens. On the other hand, there's a lot of stuff here. Like I was having this conversation with Francis the other night. This is an everywhere class. This is what I call a survey course. Right? We've talked about everything. If the word privacy shows up, it's relevant. It's not so easy. So I have this. I will be available. I'm not going anywhere other than hopefully in front of a computer between now and the 22nd of December at 6:30, right? 6:30 to 9:30, I think. Something like that. Where it'll be discussed. Yeah.
Any questions? I guess we should put them really through the Twin site so everybody can see what.
I would say any questions, email me. And if you think they're worth it, just remind me to post them. But I don't know if I'd see them in the Twin site in the same way. If you've been using that, I apologize. I haven't. It's not really where I look. I figure people are going to get to me directly. But I will try to put out answers to questions that seem to be of general value. I'm also happy to set up time in my office. I know you guys are day people or day workers. We can find a time or we'll meet on the phone, by Skype, whatever's easiest. I really do want to be available. Anybody taking licensing next semester? Oh, good. I'll try not to share the same stories. Worse is when I'm doing cyber law and one of the other substantive classes, cyber law and privacy or the externship, because the same stuff comes up, and woe is it. I have people in both classes, and like by the second time, they're like, oh, anything else? Open paper materials. How many of you are typing? Thank you. It's okay. How many of you are graduating in January? Okay. So you'll have your exam graded out. You all will. I'm not worried about it. But I do need to know those sorts of things. I'm not really worried about it. When I had 60 to do, that was a problem. 60 essay exams. Any other general Touro College Jacob D. Fuchsberg questions? No. You guys get involved at all? Or you just come, you go? You know. I mean, I know there are night people in the SBA. I know every once in a while there's a town hall sometimes. You know, those of us who aren't vampires do feel like you're part of this. And I got to tell you, if you... Maybe you don't. Hopefully you don't feel isolated. But to the extent you may decide that you feel a little isolated from the school culture, it's nothing compared to what it's like for an adjunct. I came in, just my own experience, I started adjuncting 10 years ago, teaching nights. And I came in, I didn't know where anything was. Nobody's around. It was the old building, which meant there was no place to sit. There were no offices for the adjuncts. There were no couches. There's no place. There was no lounge. It's our old middle school. There was one of the law reviews, the back of the law review office, there was a desk that was sort of the designated place for an adjunct to sit. You know, it was just... So I had no idea about anything in the school. At least... Hopefully there's the bookstores open a little bit for you guys, the cafeteria. If you get here early enough, you could meet the people who work there at least a little bit. You know, Dahlia works pretty late. Margaret's here sometimes. Those are nice people. I don't know. Like I said many times, I love our night program. So thank you guys for letting me indulge this class this semester. Hopefully it met some of your expectations and didn't disappoint the others too much. I'm not going to keep you. If you want to hang out, we can hang out, but otherwise I'm sure you all would love to get a little more sleep than usual. I don't know how you do it. Even for me, just these two nights for the last 2 weeks, I'm a wreck the next morning. You know? So, any of your days? Your all nights? So, you're all 4 years sleep deprived? Is that right? You know what? You're going to graduate, right? You're going to go off and do one job you're gonna be like, you feel like you're on drugs, good drugs, because you're suddenly gonna have enough rest. Only one thing to think about at a time. It's an astonishing thing. Anyway, thank you all. I do appreciate it. Hopefully you learned some stuff, and I look forward to reading your exams and learning from you.